What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 116. So, yeah, this is a third week in a row.
Yeah, y'all go to church. Sometimes it's near.
Right. The amount of consistency you are getting out of this crew is unparalleled. Even when we had seven cast members, we still was only going every other week. You know, at this point, you know, you got a small group, but the world has been throwing us right hooks and jabs and uppercuts.
You ain't never lied.
Every week, man. I'm your host, Day. You've already heard the greatest American hero, Tom.
I don't even know if I can say believe it or not, man. Like, we in Ripley's land. Right. Shit.
And the homie from Ohio. Scott, what's going on, man?
Not much. Seems like a somber way to start it up.
Yeah, it's different this time.
It is.
It's different, but it's the same in that it's terrible. This is like the right. Shittiest incarnation of Groundhog's Day. 2020 yep. Is just Bill Murray. He is just the Bill Murray year.
Just over and over, man. This is just crazy.
Yes.
Yeah, if you haven't already heard, which I'm sure you have at this point, and you heard the beginning of the show, Chadwick Boseman, the actor who played T'Challa, King T'Challa, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Black Panther, tragically passed away after a four-year battle of colon cancer. He not only played Black Panther, he also played Jackie Robinson. He played Thurgood Marshall. He played James Brown. He played roles that were so important for Black folks and for American history through the lens of Black culture, that there just aren't people who could play those roles. He played them with pride. He played them with grace. He played them with passion. And he will be sorely, sorely missed.
Amen. Amen.
Yep. I'm going to let y'all get into this a little bit, Tom. And I'll come back with something a little bit later. Scott, go ahead.
Well, you know, a lot of my friends and know I'm a big Marvel fan and whatnot. And I actually, you know, usually when a celebrity dies, you don't really, you know, you just kind of talk about it when you at least my friends and family, whenever something like this happens, usually you just talk the next time you see people. But this one, I actually had texts on my phone. That's how I found out. I wasn't paying attention to the news, and I had texts coming at me going, "Hey, did you hear Chadwick Boseman died?" And I, you know, it takes you off guard when you hear that, because you're like, wait a minute, what? Okay. And that's how I learned the news. And, I think that's a testament to the gravitas that he had, kind of as an actor. And, you know, they, ABC did a tribute to him on Sunday. And, I think they said it best. There's a line in the show, or in the tribute show that they did, that said, he's the perfect actor that embodies, he's the perfect actor we need right now, that embodies the change we so desperately require in 2020. And that's the perfect way to kind of call this. I mean, it's kind of amazing when an actor like this has made such an impact with really such a short time frame. I was telling Damon before we started recording, you know, I read another article that was kind of already kind of comparing him to the hole that he's left, kind of similar to Bruce Lee. You know, Bruce Lee, when he passed, it kind of caused an explosion of, you know, American martial arts. And this, it has a kind of feel to it that, you know, I mean, he brought life to all these characters that real life people and fictional characters as well to the big screen for everybody to see and learn and admire. And I don't know, it just kind of it hits you where you don't want to be hit. I mean, and of course it happens in a year that is you know, I have had a personal, you know, personally I've had a rough 2020. I know everybody has, but my, you know, my mother passed early this year. Oh. And this year's just been it's been rough. And, you know, it just keeps coming, even, and, you know, one of my favorite actors passing too, of course, that's, it just, yeah. I mean, just chalk it up to another thing that goes on in 2020. I mean, it's it's not news you want to wake up to. It's not news you want to get into a text, and it's not news you just want to read or see on TV. Yeah. It's just it's just, I don't know, you know, I can't wait for next year to start. I mean, it's September. We still have, you know, 3 months, 4 months of stuff to wade through. And, you know, we've got some chances for 2020 to turn around, but we've got some chances for it to really tank as well. And I don't know. I'm rambling at this point. It's just, it sucks. I mean, I was just telling my dad, he was going, hey, what movie should I watch on Netflix? And I said, hey, if you haven't watched any, definitely watch The Five Bloods. It's very good. And, you know, Chadwick's part in that movie is small, but it's very major as well. It's a major supporting role. He's very good in it. And, you know, that's just an example of what he can do. I mean, you know, 42 and Black Panther, kind of the movies that he's really well known for. Yeah, somebody else take this. I could ramble and ramble and ramble.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm with Scott on this one. It really has been a kicky in the nuts kind of year. You know, and the hits keep on coming, you know, God willing, and the creek don't rise is the last one we're going to take, but I'm not confident in that at all. you know, a couple of things about this recent loss that we've taken. It's been said about Chadwick Boseman, you know, it's been just, it's been pretty universal, the praise. Also, one of the things that we've spoken about and speaking about Chadwick is that, you know, it's so odd that Damon and I just had this conversation, I believe, on the podcast about a certain kind of characterization of black manhood that that just isn't very common these days.
Yep.
And I really believe that Chadwick Boseman embodied that older style of just black manhood that sort of just embodied like rectitude and dignity, you know, and you know, actually a interesting story that I learned about is, you know, while he was in his acting class at Howard, he became eligible for this study abroad program but didn't have the money to go. The acting teacher, Felicia Rashad, probably my first crush, but we can talk about that later, wrote her friend, Mr. Denzel Washington, and told him about some of these actors that were in this class that, you know, had this ability to go over across the pond in London and study there, but couldn't afford it. And he just said, I got it. I'll take care of it. And so Chadwick Boseman was one of the people whom Denzel Washington sent to this to the school. And then this is something that Chadwick has said, you know, there's no Black Panther without Denzel Washington. And I just, that story just felt very inspiring to me because You know, that there's a whole, you know, a hackneyed phrase of like each one teach one, you know, when you get to the top, you know, make sure to look behind you, pull somebody back else up and all that.
Lift while you climb. Yeah.
Exactly. But when you see it actually work, you know what I mean? You get things like Black Panther, you know, and I just, if there's any kind of silver lining or a positive note to take from this, I think that's what it is. You know, we're going to apparently continue to take ass whoopings for the rest of this year, and potentially into the beginning of next year. But, you know, if you're conscientious and you're careful, you know, you can plant seeds that will bear beautiful fruit tomorrow.
Nice, man. You know, for me, it's a couple of different moments, right? You know, I talk about my kids a lot, right? I talk about the importance of representation and kind of the lens that my children see this world through. Black Panther was the first black superhero to carry their own film. Let's make no bones about it. This is the first, you know, all like Blade, cool, love it, right? Blade is a very small, although the movie is great, franchise is great,
and Blade is an anti-hero. Like, Blade is awesome, but he's
not. Oh yeah, and Blade's got a niche. He's got a niche audience because of the rating and the setting and the yeah.
Any number of different.
Yeah, tentpole status. The you know, the whole flagship behind you, Black Panther's definitely the first.
Look, Black Panther played in China. You know what I mean? And when you get over to China and the Koreas, you break all that shit down and, you know, they embrace you. You made it. You hit Will Smith status, right?
There you go.
You know, it's amazing that my children at the young age got an opportunity to see such an actor present a black superhero for them. Early in their lives. I'm 41 years old. Right? I was, what, 39 when this shit came out? And that is the first time I got to see it. A whole ass adult with kids. My kids got to see it early. And to see the pride on their faces and like to see everybody wanting to be Black Panther. To see the fact that Black Panther transcended race in a way that not many heroes have, right? Like, everybody wanted to be Black Panther. The same way everybody wants to be Spider-Man. The same way everybody wants to be Batman, right? Black Panther was that. So to have an actor play it with such presence, poise, elegance, you know, he was a king. There was regality to the way that he played the role. You know, Chadwick, he did everything and more. And on top of that, we come to find out later he was already battling colon cancer while he's filming. It's just crazy. You know, my oldest son, when he found out, I was trying to figure out how to tell him, and he was looking at my phone and he was like, "Daddy, what happened to Black Panther?" And I told him. And he kind of took it and said, "Damn, it's not going to be another Black Panther movie." And he walked away for about 15 minutes. Then he came back. And then the enormity of it hit him. The impact of what it means for this loss hit a 9-year-old kid. And he broke down. And he broke down hard. So, of course, I broke down.
Of course.
Right? Because you see your child understanding the loss of
thing, right?
You know, you see your child understanding the enormity, like what this truly means. And the 6-year-old saw his brother and his father crying. He didn't really know what the fuck was going on. He's watching some on TV.
But it's got to be bad.
Right. And he just came over for the hug just to be part of the embrace, man. It was very, very difficult. You know, that's what it meant. You know, that's what Chad means. You know, he was a Howard alum, and he never let you forget it. You know, every opportunity.
Like many Howard alum.
Yeah, basically, right. Anybody who goes to Howard, you're never going to have to worry if they worry about where they went
to school. Yeah, you're going to know. You're going to know.
You're going to know where they went to school, right? Yeah. HU, you know. You know, for I didn't go to Howard for undergrad. I went to Howard when I was 12 years old. And I went to Howard for a science and engineering camp for Black kids who were talented. You know, that's where I have a lot of memories on that campus. It's a part of me. So it also helps that he was a part of that as well. But it also hurts, you know, it's kind of like this connective tissue. But you know, the dude was incredible. People talk about his role as Storm and Norman in the Five Bloods. It wasn't that long, but it was impactful as fuck. And the thing that really, really
got me,
right? I was watching Get On Up, the James Brown movie, and there's a scene where Chadwick is James Brown and Nelson Ellis is Bobby Bird, James Brown's longtime friend, collaborator, roadman. And this wave just kind of washed over me because Nelson passed away a couple years ago.
Yep.
And Chad gone too. These incredibly talented young Black men.
Just gone. Ridiculously talented.
Ridiculously talented, right? Gone way too early. Both of them. And it just crushed me. So yeah, this is hard, man. You know, I think people will hear what Scott said about the idea of comparing his loss to Bruce Lee, and I do not believe that that is too far a stretch.
Neither do I.
There are very specific actors who can tell stories the way that Chadwick did, and to take it as seriously as he did and have the connections with Felicia Rashad and Denzel, like that is rarefied air.
Absolutely.
That is telling the part of Black culture in American history, you know, woven into the fabric of all of us. There is nothing that can really, you know, kind of slide into that place.
And, you know, just to, if I may, just to sort of cement this connection, because I think that Scott really nailed it, just to cement this connection between Bruce Lee and Chad Bozeman, there is, you know, there's the coolness of Bruce Lee, and there's the charm, there's the charisma, there's the physicality that everybody gets, but there's an air of pride that a lot of folks, maybe you don't quite catch, but, you know, this is in growing up in my household on Fridays, we get pizza and watch kung fu movies. This was our thing every week.
Yeah.
And we can get into the whole history of why kung fu movies are so sort of central to Black culture, but that's
story for another time. It's cultural.
You know,
it was Saturday for us.
Yeah, that's a whole
kung fu theater Saturday at 12.
Yeah, absolutely. But what I will say is this: you know that the feeling of pride. There's a particular scene in The Chinese Connection, in which there's a sign in Japanese on this beautiful park in Shanghai in China that says no Chinese or dogs allowed.
Yep.
And Bruce is trying to cross this bridge to catch a killer, and they won't let him in. And one of the Japanese men says, you know what, I'll tell you what, if you get down on your hands and knees and pretend to be a dog, I'll walk you into the park. Even though the sign says that no dogs or Chinese, the implication is that you're even a dog I could take in before I could take you in.
Yep.
And Bruce at that point jumps up, kicks the sign off the wall, and in the same swoop, kicks the sign and break shatters into a million pieces. If, you know, a lot of us, we don't really catch that, but we kind of get it, but that's a real sign. That was a real sign in a real park.
I mean, Black people got it.
In China. And the theater, when they showed this in China, exploded, because that's some real shit that people went through.
Yeah, that's them.
Right? And he was a symbol of pride for them.
Yeah.
And I think that Chadwick is going to be something like that.
There's a connective tissue between both of those things.
Yes, right? there absolutely is.
Right. You know, the same way we kind of laud the Lovecraft for painting pictures of Black American pain, right? that is the same thing. You know, having Chad embody Jackie Robinson and watching him brim with intensity and anger, self-control, pride, brilliance, all of those things. Listening to Jackie's daughter talk about the fact that Chadwick got it. She felt like her father, that's what he was. That's how he carried himself. There are not many people who deal with, look, we see these autobiographical films all the time now, particularly now.
Oh, yeah.
And how many stories do you get of the family being upset about the way that somebody was represented afterwards?
All the time.
Not with Chad.
No.
Not with Chad.
Not you once.
You listen to James Brown's daughter, and she talks about the fact that Chad came to the house to try on James' old outfits. He would, you know, go work on the moves, the grooves, the singing, the dancing for 5 hours a day, working on choreography to get himself right. Then he would go back to the house to get more James. So by the time he's doing it, he was James Brown. He was, and then, you know, I think a lot of dedicated actors believe that they would do the same, but not all of them will do it that way. So,
well, and to the point of James, that was James. He was all, you know, the stories about him finding bandmates for missing notes and backup dancers for missing steps are, you know, they are prolific and they are legendary. But that was James.
There are cues within songs that we talk about that were actually him finding them in real time.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, so like, and a lot of actors would have been method in this, that, and the third, but they wouldn't have thought, I don't think that they would have gotten that the secret to James, you know, the quote unquote hardest working man in show business was really the hard work, the discipline. Yeah. Like it's not on the 1.5. It's not on the 0.75. It's on the one. It's on the one every time.
Every time. Yep.
Dude. And that's what he got.
He got it, man. You know, it is almost by kismet or whatever you want to call it that Marvel had already cast him by the time Ryan Coogler got him.
Right.
And then we see what came to be of Black Panther with this incredible cast. And at the middle of all of this, you know, this Black excellence, right? You know, we talk about Wakanda, you know, Black Americans are people who've lost their history, who've lost their past due to slavery. And to see so many different African tribes and see their influence and see their culture all melded into one within Wakanda, that really was something that speaks for all of us. And when you hear Wakanda Forever, it's more than just a kitschy, you know, cross your arms across your chest. This is a saying that represents all Black people. A lot of folks don't get that. It's just kind of this thing. It's like, whatever, shut up. It's a made up African place that, you know, people still think Africa's, you know, a country, right? So to see so many different tribes, so much history, all kind of represented in one place on a movie that went across the globe, and to see it represented with pride and to see it represented in a way that we've never seen Black African history done in mainstream media. This shit is like nothing else. And to see Chad at the anchor, there's nobody but Chad who could have done it. As great as Michael B. Jordan is, he won Chad.
No, I think Michael B. Jordan played the part that he was supposed to play. You know, I think that they did a wonderful job of not trying to shoehorn everybody into every little thing.
Yep. I love it, man. So, you know, in the words of Michael B. Jordan, is this your king? Hell yes.
Yep.
Chad, you will be missed, brother. Chadwick Boseman, I appreciate everything you've done for us, man. So
let's ask the question. We talk Marvel every episode. What do they do now?
Oof, what would Get Out the Room do?
Black I Panther. Think that the answer is obvious. I mean, I think that they move forward with the Shuri administration. You know, there's a, you know, the beauty of Black Panther is that Black Panther is it's a ceremonial title. Anyone can be Black Panther. So the comic books, this storyline jives with the comic books, and I think that's what they do. There was an idea that they bring back Michael B. Jordan because we never see the body, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Me neither. Me neither. Like, it invalidates one of the coldest lines in cinematic.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't think he, yeah, exactly. Exactly. It invalidates his death, which was for meaningful. Real. Yes, yeah. It was meaningful.
But there were already rumors before Chadwick went that he was going to be back anyway.
Yeah, but not from the people making the movie, just folks who wanted to see it. I don't think that. I love Michael B. Jordan. I've liked that kid since he was Wallace. You know what I mean? Since he
so does everybody love Michael B. Jordan,
right?
Motherfucker, might as well be Raymond.
Right.
Everybody loves him,
right? Like, you know, I love that dude. He don't had that, whatever that little special sauce from South Carolina that Chad had, he don't had that.
Yeah, no, he's not Black Panther. And let's just be clear. They're not gonna recast T'Challa.
No, they're not.
They won't do it. It's not happening.
I don't think so either.
No.
Y'all just go ahead and relax.
Well, and I think the reason behind that is if they were going to wait 5-10 years, but they're not going to. They have to get a Black Panther movie out there.
Yeah. No, I don't mean Fury.
In all honesty, they should have. I mean, Black Panther should have been probably this year, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
So I agree. I don't think they I think it's slated for 2022. That's entirely too early to recast. Not to mention, I don't think you can anyway.
You can't. I mean, production's already a year behind, so.
Right. So I think I agree with Tony. I would go the Shuri route myself. I've read, you know, I read a cool article about Okoye maybe being a Black Panther as well, which I'd be behind. I like Denai.
Yeah, I don't know if Adora can be Black Panther, though.
And so there, that's where that's an interesting story point.
Anyone can be Black Panther. Anybody can challenge the throne.
I do not believe as Dora you can.
Oh, you know what though? Yeah, there's a very, you know, yeah, that's a good point. Cause there's a very good line in which she's, you know, yeah. You know what? I think you're right. I don't think that's something she would do. That's a good point. That's a good point.
So I think the only, as of right now, I think the only selection is Shuri.
Yeah.
And Marvel's probably going, just doing the same thing we are. I mean, we wanted to see 2, 3, 4 more Black Panther movies before Absolutely. Shuri took over.
Absolutely. And probably two more, right?
The trilogy is probably
at the end of the third Black Panther movie, you turn it over to Shuri. I think that's kind of what we
want. And I'm down for that. That's right. A great idea.
Right.
But I mean, you could even make you could make what's her name? Lupita could be Black Panther, I guess.
Yeah, sure. But Letitia Wright is incredibly talented.
Yeah. And she was one of the breakout characters from that movie too.
She was, particularly recognizing that she is the smartest person in the MCU.
Yeah, no doubt. She was great. I think that you know, I'll be honest. I mean, you know, I believe we've spoken about this on the podcast. I know Damon and I have spoken about this. I wasn't particularly a fan of this storyline in the books.
Yep.
But I do think that in the movies, and considering our circumstances, that this could play very well. And the reason why I wasn't a fan of it in the books is because it came from a very particular kind of place.
So T'Challa's in the Necropolis, right?
Right.
Yeah. And Wakanda is at war with Atlantis. So Yeah.
And A, Shuri's Black Panther comic book costume is like, it's Black Panther, but it's got a lot of like belts and spears and feathers and fur.
Well, it's gonna have a ton of tech, because that's,
and I am down for that. I mean, it's a really cool look. I mean, it's there's a lot of articles out there right now of insiders saying Marvel is, of course, you know, just as heartbroken as everybody else, but now they've got to think business wise too. They're going, well, what the hell are we gonna do?
Yeah.
I mean, he was gonna play into movies and shows for 10 years plus.
At least.
And
well, I mean, sure he could do.
And he was going to be an anchor. He was going to be an anchor for the next Avengers movie.
Yep. Sure he could do that. Sure he could do that. Sure his tech is so good that as we're training up a new Iron Man, she could be a consultant with that. Like, sure he can do all those things.
So because of that, I actually like her as. I would still maybe sit on Shuri being Black Panther for the time being. I'd make her the third Black Panther, because I like the idea of her setting characters up with tech. I like her being kind of the person that kind of helps them, not behind the scenes, but, you know, she's their tech guru. She's the person you talk to when you're out in the field. She helps you in your ear. She hooks you up with this badass weapon. I like the idea of maybe pushing the, you know, an Okoye or a I think her name's Nakia, is that right?
Yeah,
Nakia. Peeta's character. I like the idea of maybe them doing it now, and maybe they fail at being the Black Panther, so Shuri has to step up into that role. And then we still get the Shuri being the character that she was going to take over the role anyway at some point, probably from T'Challa. Maybe she does that under this circumstance as well. But that way she can develop more as a character. She develops more. She's like the female Tony Stark who doesn't operate in the field yet. And then she does when she has to, and she's the best Black Panther of all time at that point, or she's the best at that, you know, up to that point. She can surpass everyone because she has the scientific brain and she has the fighting ability matched together. And she's now the deadliest person to ever don the Black Panther, you know, something to that effect.
Look,
that's a direction maybe I would go. I love the idea of her being Black Panther, but I think I want to see her develop more in the character or in the role she's in now before she takes up that mantle.
But there's a storyline for that. You know, you have M'Baku challenge, and now that T'Challa is no longer there, he becomes Black Panther. Or you have Daniel Kaluuya's character, who already tried to run a coup, have him challenged, and now that T'Challa is no longer there to stop him, he becomes Black Panther. We do that for a little bit, and then we have a return of the rightful heir type of storyline with Shuri. Like, there's a path to go with that.
And honestly, that kind of helps Marvel in the. The one department I think that they struggle with Black Panther is he doesn't really have great villains. So this would provide them an opportunity to explore the supporting characters without having to, you know, create a villain or bring in it. I mean, look, we were kind of talking about Wakanda versus Atlantis at first. I mean, that would still be a cool storyline.
Well, Namor is a traditional foe to him.
But I mean, Namor, when I think Namor, I personally think Namor more is like a Fantastic Four character or an X-Men character before Black Panther.
I mean, I get that, but there's a very long standing.
I know. It's the whole royalty thing and the whole, right. they're both proud fictional countries. You know what I mean? Them clashing is just a natural.
Don't you dare forget about Doom.
Well, I was going to say.
Yeah,
Latveria is probably where we'd have liked to have gone, but you know, the problem is we're now theorizing on shit that hasn't happened and we don't even know if it's gonna happen. You know, I think Shuri's probably a safe bet. I would love to see.
She's a safe bet. Absolutely right. Right. She's the safe bet.
Marvel likes safe bets. You know, we like getting money.
Yeah, but at this point, I mean, they print money. They playing with house money. I don't even think.
They got a shaky for 4 years coming up, dog.
I mean, true that, but let me see what they. I mean, dude, they took a huge gamble with Guardians of the Galaxy, and that shit paid off.
I agree.
They made me watch Ant-Man. I don't even like that motherfucker.
I agree.
Like,
I agree. Like, particularly because he is so tied into the Avengers story. Everything he did made so much more sense, particularly by the time you get to Endgame, right? Like, all the shit that you watch through him, it makes so much more sense. Yeah, and I'm cool with that. I'm perfectly cool with that. But here's the thing. Shang-Chi, which I actually believe will be dope.
And it's going to I hope so.
It's going to blow all the doors off of China, right?
It's definitely going to blow the doors off of China, but don't we run into a Clinton Barton problem again? Like, we dealing with literal gods.
We do.
You know, and so I get it. Go ahead and make that China money. I'm not mad at you.
Right.
I'm just saying, I don't know if it's going to hold up and scale with the other shit that we're watching.
Right.
You might have to
If you're speaking of that, I mean, if we're talking scale, we just watched the most grand epic movie of all time in Avengers Endgame, and the first movie of Phase 4 is going back to a dead character and giving her a solo movie now. I mean, I don't know. That seems like, to me, I wouldn't have gone that route. I like the idea of Black Widow not having a movie. Like, it's run her course. We don't need a movie.
But I don't think
that was contract fulfulment.
I don't think Black Widow is part of a particular narrative. I think the entire story of Black Widow is to pass the mantle of Black Widow onto her sister, so we can keep that particular skill set with Florence Pugh into the next.
And there we go. And that's another perfect example to bring in the Young Avengers.
I agree with you. Like, in fact,
Shuri Black Panther could be a Young Avenger too.
Exactly, right? So now, like, I was watching something the other day. You know, it had Kamala Khan, Spider-Gwen.
That's like another Squirrel. That's like the next, like the new Young Avengers.
Yeah, Squirrel Girl, yep. a couple others. Right? But Squirrel Girl, dope, man.
No, she's undefeated.
She's very
reigning champion.
Yeah, her power.
You knew they were supposed to bring Squirrel Girl to the small screen, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
It was going to be the AT&T girl.
Yes, her name is Milana Weintraub. Yeah.
But nothing for her.
Yeah,
nothing ever came of that.
She's the cartoon voice of it now, but she's still slated to be the person. If that ever happens, who knows? But the idea is dope. You know, if Shuri, that's a great place for her to fit in. I don't know if overall that Black Panther stands as tall within Spider-Man and what we get from the Guardians of the Galaxy with Shang-Chi. Right. And do we have? The Eternals after that, too?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, and the Eternals, and then Thor, Love and Thunder.
Doctor Strange.
The multiverse. So there's a lot of shit coming up, right? You know, maybe in the multiverse, you know, Michael B. Jordan doesn't die. Maybe they pluck him out that way. Who knows? I don't know.
So, you know, the more I'm thinking about it, you say safe bets. I think the safe bet is Michael B. Jordan somehow being Black Panther.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him being a good person, but instead of them using the Infinity Stones, which I think is done, you know, in the Multiverse of Madness, you just pluck his ass out of one of the timelines.
Yeah,
right?
And you say, yeah, you go like, well, Killmonger's good in this universe, and, you know, he just happens to be the Black Panther. Right. You know, I mean, that, again, that's a cop-out move, but it's a move that makes sense, given that now you can tell a male Black Panther story, I suppose. If you want to go that route,
I got it. They do a Thomas Wayne in an alternate timeline. Right. T'Challa is the one who's assassinated, and T'Chaka is the Black Panther.
I like that idea.
You give me Idris. You give me Idris. He proved with that. What was it? Shaw. He's still quite physical.
Wow.
I'm a young T'Chaka.
That is definitely an idea.
That's a dope idea.
Get
out the room. Investigate T'Chaka. I like that.
If you take this one from us, like, we know. Come on.
Yeah. If y'all take this one, you gotta pay us.
Bro. Well, hold on. Do you cast Idris since he already was what's his name?
Heimdall? Don't give a fuck about no Heimdall.
Yeah, don't worry about
it. No, I know that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you definitely cast Idris. If you don't cast Idris, I mean, I was going to say Mahershala Ali, but he's already Blade.
He's already Blade.
So who do you go with? Let's just pretend you can't use Idris. Who do you use?
There ain't nobody left. Denzel.
I was about to say, Denzel's the only person Denzel. I would say.
God, Denzel would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Denzel. He's not going to do the accent.
No,
he can't do any of the stunts or anything. But, not that he has to, but.
I mean, he's been doing, what was that, the Equalizer?
Oh, the Equalizer, yeah, that's true.
But that's not, that, no.
Yeah, what is it, Zosha, the Zosha language that they've created?
So that, do you know who the popular pick, if they were going to recast T'Challa, people like, what's his name, the dude from Tenet?
Denzel's son?
Denzel's son? David Washington?
Yeah.
Too small. He's too small.
He is small.
Yeah, he is small.
He's too small. It's not going to be him. Yeah, I honestly cannot think of anybody other than Idris.
Hold on. I was just watching an episode of Black Mirror. What's his name?
Daniel Kaluuya. He's already in it.
No. I think his name is Aldous Hodge.
Mm-hmm.
I can't place the face. Hold on. Let me do some.
He's tall. He's a big dude. He played MC Ren in Straight Outta Compton.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in. He was in.
Aldous Hodge. Yeah.
This could work.
He actually looks very similar.
This could work.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of maybe just casting a younger T'Chaka and having somebody like him do it. I like that idea, Tony. That's nice. I like that.
You pop his ass out of the multiverse as T'Chaka, young, spry, and very swole, very sexy. You know what I mean?
Yep. Oh, yo, what about our the first impossible black man? He's probably
the first purge.
Yeah, Alain Noel. I don't know if he can do the social.
I think he's too small too.
I think he's what? Five, yeah, because he wasn't that much taller than
he
can't be taller than Issa Rae. So
yeah, he like 5'9" tops. Like he's too small. But Aldous Hodge could work. I like that.
That's good call.
He's 6'1". Aldous Hodge is 6'1".
He could do it. He big already too. He could do it.
All right, Marvel. Well, look, man, y'all got your marching orders. I mean, come on. If we didn't knock that one out the park, I don't know what else you want us to do. I mean, what else you want us to do? Come on.
Pay us, motherfuckers. Pay us. Pay us.
I like that, man. I like the, like, a Flashpoint Black Panther. I like that.
Yeah, that's a dope idea, man.
It is.
Particularly recognizing we already have the multiverse set up.
See, and then you do that. You and then eventually T'Chaka dies, and then Shuri takes over. Boom. There you go.
Boom. That gives you that little bridge.
He just pop his ass out.
Because look, Marvel wants to tell more, like, I know they're probably going, we want to tell more male Black Panther stories. We can't recast T'Challa. How are we going to do this?
Right.
How are we going to bridge the gap? Because Shuri, we want Shuri in 10 years or 5 years or however long it's going to be. Probably 10 years at this point. Let's bridge the gap. I like that, man. I hope Marvel is listening. They could take the idea.
They're listening. But in the meantime, Shuri gets
all that money. Just give me 1 point on the back end.
There you go.
That's almost nothing to y'all. Y'all ain't gonna miss that.
Just give me a point on the back end. Everybody here, get out the room production. You know, if there are folks on the masthead, go ahead, put it up. Everybody gets a point. We make happen. Or, you know, give us a writer credit. With some payment, we can make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. Wakanda Forever, Black Lives Matter, Arrested Costa, Kill Breonna Taylor, Rittenhouse should rot in jail. So now we're going to... slide into our weekly Lovecraft...
Slide right on out and right on in.
Right on in. Yeah. Warm it up. Let's get it.
All right.
Ooh, wee. This is episode 3. Good God.
Yeah. Buckle up, motherfuckers. It's about to get ignorant up in here.
So, before we start, as we start here, I'm just going to say this. This show has, and I think I told you guys this. It's got an anthology feel without being an anthology.
Every story, every episode has a different feel to it.
And well, every single one, the first episode is a Monster of the Week movie or a show. And then the second episode is a very conspiracy-ish. And then this one is a haunted house.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote, I mean, we've been spoiling the episode, so I'm just going to break it out.
Oh, hold on. Hold on. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Yeah. 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 Nightmare Fuel is a basketball player with a baby head. That's some nightmare fuel.
Oh, yeah. The baby, the cooing as this motherfucker is up. That curdled all my milk, nigga. Like, I can't.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It was a lot, and this is from somebody who watches fucked up shit on the reg. That was too much. But so much here. Like, this is what American Horror Story would be like if it was just a little bit more coherent. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, this was something else. And in the midst of all this craziness, we still got some like solid character development.
Yep.
Solid character development.
Yeah. We got a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always suspected Letty wouldn't shit. I got some proof on this episode. I got some proof. Solid proof.
Hold on. The idea that Letty wasn't shit has always been told. The fact that she didn't show up to her own mother's funeral. And
yeah, but see, I was rooting for her. I thought that there were extenuating circumstances to each and every one of these events. And I was really on some, you know, some harlot with a heart of gold bullshit. I really was until this episode. And I was like, oh, she really bought that trife life. That's what this is.
Yeah. I guess my whole thing is this, man. You have an episode that starts out with Letty buying a house on the north side of Chicago, which, you know, is notorious for not being very welcoming to Black folks.
I was just going to say Whiteville.
Yeah.
Can we just take a programming note right now, though? Because so this is late 50s. Yeah, this is late 50s, 1958,
1959.
Is that about right?
Was it 50? No, I don't remember, honestly, to be very honest.
I think it's after Korea, so it's...
Yep, after
Korea. Let's say...
Korea War was 53, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're talking about mid to late 50s. There are parts of the north side of Chicago I wouldn't go to now.
Right.
Now! So, like, the idea that, look, you can be as light-skinned, wavy-haired, pretty as you want to be, but the idea that you was going to take your beige ass to the north side of Chicago in 1955 and buy a house, I don't even care if it's the scariest, spookiest, fucked-up house on the block. What in the fucking, like, literally, have you lost your cotton picking mind? Like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, it takes place 54, 55.
Yeah, there's no way in God's green earth, and at that point, what, Eisenhower's America, that you was going to try to think you was going to buy a house.
On top of the fact that you not only going to buy a house.
You can't even do it. They wouldn't sell it to you. Like, right. It's legally impossible. Like, right. they needed to do some stuff here.
Right.
This was not, and it's you know, here's how fucked up America is. The most unbelievable thing about this plot is the fact that she was allowed to buy the
house.
Not the ghost and the seance and all the other shit. Nope. The fact that redlining didn't get her ass.
Nope. So, and that right there is a testament to how great the show is. It's got a feel of, you know, when you were watching The Walking Dead, the beauty of it was the real true villains weren't the zombies. Yep. It's not the zombies, it's the people. And in this show, it's the people. I mean, yeah, yes, a haunted house is scary. Yes, these crazy monsters are scary, but they're doing all this in the scariest setting possible for African Americans. I mean, they get done, you know, dealing with the monsters. Oh, and by the way, they have to start defending themselves inside of a cabin when two cops have guns on them. Oh, shit.
I mean,
you
got to defend yourself from the monsters outside and inside.
Yeah. And it's just the scariest place imaginable.
Which is the theme of the entire show.
Exactly.
Outside and inside.
Yep.
Every situation, there are monsters within and without. Right.
Did anybody else get what was it? I want to say Freddie Gray. Anybody else get some flashbacks of Freddie Gray during that scene in the paddy wagon?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's exactly what it was.
I was like,
That's exactly the tactic.
What they doing?
I think I said that shit to Scott. Like that. Yep. That's what they. The Baltimore police were accused of killing folks by doing it, by putting you in a paddy wagon, you know, not securing you, and just letting the paddy wagon fuck you up while they hold on to the straps.
Mm-hmm. I wish they would have kept it a little more true to Chicago. What they used to do in Cook County, they beat you with the phone book because the depression is spread out, so you don't leave a bruise. So they beat the shit out of you with the phone book. Hurts, but no bruises.
She's That's a lady.
No, I know. It's just a very particular Cook County kind of thing that I wish they would have shown. But
okay. I mean, but you also have white folks who clearly felt like there was only so much they had to do because of the house that the black folks were living.
Right.
Right. There's eugenics involved. There's a bad doctor. You know, there is the 13 ghosts kind of feel of like they have not passed over because they're still
13 ghosts. That was a good call. Good call.
Yeah. I was just going to say, how we're talking about that.
Is better. 13 ghosts is better.
Right. And they played this for all that it was. Meanwhile, the interpersonal ship between Tick and Letty takes a completely new turn, and I don't think we should even spoil that part, right?
No, we're just gonna tiptoe around that moment.
Yeah, like there's a moment in the party because I watched this episode like 3 times. The first time I watched it, I didn't realize that Tick was there from the beginning. I thought he left and came back. He was there the whole time.
Wait, okay, so explain that to me. I didn't he left, but he came back. He did come back though, because he had on his uniform.
No, he was there in the beginning, in the very beginning of the party scene.
Remember, he lived there past at that point.
Yeah, he stayed there. So the very like one of the first scenes of the party, you see Tick walk past Letty with a beer, and she's like, "You just gonna walk past me and not say nothing?" So then she's going through the house pouring drinks for everybody. Mm-hmm. As soon as the scene opens, he's on his way out. And then later, you hear that he's been out front keeping watch. Right?
And he's been doing that in his uniform?
Yeah.
Yes, that's why he put the uniform on.
Okay. I like that better. Okay, yep.
So, he was there the whole time.
Okay, see, I see that I was one of those people. I thought he had gone and then come back.
But yeah, okay. Now that scene changes the way you see it, right?
Yes. Huh, okay.
Right? You see him dancing with Letty. And you see Tick just squirming with anger.
He's seething.
Right?
To the point where some stranger pulls him to the side. And says probably the coldest thing I've ever heard on screen before is like,
yep.
If that's your woman, you might want to let her know.
Yep.
If that's yours, you might want to tell her.
Yep.
Which was the blackest and wisest thing I've ever heard in my fucking life.
And the craziest thing about it is at this point, Jonathan Majors says nothing the entire time. It's the other character who's doing all the exposition and kind of talking you through all this. Jonathan Majors is just looking. He's just giving you expressions and emoting the whole time. Yeah, he's good.
And you know what? There's something that they sort of allude to, and I want to say the second episode that they don't ever really address again, but you get it in little bits and pieces, and it's where Letty asks his uncle, what did Tick do in the war?
Because
she noticed he's a little tight sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
What did Tick do in the war? And his uncle quickly shuts him down and says, whatever he did in the service of his country.
There's a couple moments, you know, where George kind of talks about the fact you were a good boy, right? And Tick talks about the fact that something happened. And he and you're always getting Tick to a point where he's emotionally available, and then he shuts down.
Right.
Where you're not sure what that moment is. We see Jamie Chung a lot in kind of respects to that moment. We're not sure what that will be. But there's definitely a thing there. Letty tends to evoke a lot of it. So you're not sure, right? You're not really sure what happens here.
I'm not going to tell y'all what happened because I don't really know. But I've seen, this looks familiar to me. This is something I've seen. So, I'm interested. I'm very curious to see if they take it where I think they're going to take it. And if they do, it makes complete sense why Tick is so very, it's not just like the sort of the quietness, but it's a kind of loss of control that masquerades itself as supreme control. Right. If that makes any sense at all.
Right. Because if you let go, there is nothing on the other side of the door.
Right. Right. Exactly. And this is literally a theme with Lovecraftian horror. Guard the door. Because if you miss the door, there's nothing we can do after that.
Yep.
You got to watch that end.
Yep. And that's Tick. You know, particularly when you see him and the switch flips for him. Because the switch is flipped very quickly. And Jonathan Majors does an incredible job. Of showing you when he switches to protector mode. Because when he does, he is somebody else.
And it's seamless. It really is seamless. And it's seamless despite the fact that he and Letty in this moment, they're not good. They're not terrible, but they're not good. But nonetheless, like, when she has her breakdown, he breaks right along with her.
Right.
Just, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of beautiful in a fucked up way, but
right. Yeah, you know, and it is also this moment of choreography with folks who understand the stakes of every aspect of this action. When Letty goes and everybody in the party decides to go with her, there are things that have to happen for everybody not to go to jail that work like choreography, and that is just beautiful. I watched the scene like 3 times, and it's beautiful each time.
Yeah, that whole sequence of the party and the aftermath of the party was gorgeous. And the whole time I'm watching this, I fade in and out of like. What connects this to the last episode? Like, have we lost these people? Are we still in this? Is this something different? Is this turning into like Freak of the Week? Like, what's going on? And then at the very end of the episode, we get a quick little reminder of what the fuck is really going on here.
Fucking Victoria shows up. I call her Victoria. Her name is actually Christina.
Same thing.
Her name is Victoria. That's it.
Right. And get out the room. Her name is Victoria. The character's name is Christina. But there's something really, really sinister about the interaction that Tick and Christina have, where in the first couple episodes, she spends a lot of time
trying to gain his trust.
Not just gain his trust, but like kind of tell him not all white people are bad. Like there's a language that belies race. Is not necessarily always the big divider, right?
Right.
But in this scene, race is weaponized as a threat.
Oh, it's very. Oh God, I hate to say it, but it's very white liberal of her. Like, it's some real shit. I know. I'm so sorry, Scott. I didn't want to do it. Scott, you're one of the good
people. Thanks.
God damn. This motherfucker just sat up there and said,
I'm sorry, I was wanting to try that. I've been on
How does she feel? How does it feel? Do you feel good?
It's so glorious.
face. I get what they did. It was glorious. All right, guys, I'm signing off. Have a good night. See ya.
That shit felt amazing, motherfucker. This is what Eddie Murphy felt when he got on that goddamn bus. Like, this shit is amazing.
Dude, my two shades wider right now.
Right. Fuck around, my octave's gonna get a little higher. That's the right voice, man.
This would be great. Bro, I mean, my credit score is 10 points higher right now. Feeling wonderful.
My work output gonna be mediocre as fuck. I'm still gonna get a raise. This shit's going to be amazing.
Oh man, but
it's just it's too funny not to be hurt to be mad.
but to that point though, like she pulls. Actually, the girl's name might be Karen at this point. Like she pulls some Karen ass shit on me. Karen ass shit. And reveals a little bit more of the plot that maybe I think some of us missed. Like, and we're deep into spoiler country at this point.
Well, yeah, we can talk about how, you know, Letty talks about the idea that she got this money from her mother to buy this house.
Right. Which she honestly thought that she did.
Yep, which was silly of her. But her sister correctly called her on all of her bullshit.
Right, because how you going to get this money from our mama and you ain't going to cut me in on none of it?
Or just, you know, cut any of us. You know, there's three of us here. How you going to keep all of it and just decide, of course, the action for all the money? Which, you know, is kind of the thing that kickstarts all of the plot for this particular episode.
Right. And like real talk, if Letty had just been a decent human being, yep, none of this would have happened because none she would have had enough money to buy that damn house on the north side.
Yep.
But I think that the manipulation from Queen Karen was a little deeper than we originally realized because someone points her in the direction of that house. Like, this was a long con.
Sure. So, absolutely. I mean, they're like, they could have been anywhere in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. they chose this particular house for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which had links to the Braithwaites. And I have to shout out our once collaborator, Ryan. He nailed this.
Look, Ryan's name on the mask there, brother. You know, once collaborator, he always here.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go. Ryan nailed this. You know, it's his opinion that all of these people are going to have connections to the Braithwaites, Letty's family, right, his family, all of them. Yep. And I think he's 100% fucking right on that one. I think everybody has got some connection to these people because it doesn't make sense that they would keep running into all their fucking circles.
Yeah,
man. So I'm waiting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think Ryan is right on with that. I read that interaction. I was like, damn, man.
Motherfucker had it.
Y'all motherfuckers went in on that shit. Yeah. But yeah, the episode was great. The plot. Here's the thing. We have no clue what next week brings. We recognize that Michael K. Williams as Tick's dad is trash. Trash daddy.
Trash daddy. I like that. There, but you know, there's a huge plot line to speak about, you know, generational trauma, you know?
Yes, passed on.
Yeah. Tick's dad is like, you know, he was an abused person who turned into an abuser, which is a pretty straight through line. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, you know, Tick's refuge was his uncle, daddy.
But
which is a whole nother kind of fucked up line of abuse because, like, Tick's uncle knew his daddy wasn't shit and knew his daddy wasn't shit because of stuff that he should have protected him from when he was around.
Right.
And yet he victimized his brother in some very another, in like a really real way again. Like, something ain't right here. You know what I'm saying? Like, something's not, I hadn't thought about it before until just this moment, but you know, he gets to play this sort of white knight, like he's the sensitive soul who like nurtures Tick's whatever. But in reality, he is quite literally the source of Tick's pain and one of the sources of Tick's father's pain.
Right. There's pain and refuge within trauma, right?
Yes.
You know, the idea that somebody is throwing you a raft, but they won't pull you to their island.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way Tick talks about it, he says, you know, I wore out my welcome there.
Exactly. How are you going to wear out the welcome in your own house?
Right. And then you look at, like, there's no way for him to go.
Exactly. To the point where he's like, I got to go back to Florida.
Yeah. There's just a lot to that whole thing. And as you move through this, you see these through lines, but you're not really sure what any of them are. Scott, jump in.
No, I agree completely. That's one of the things that we've been doing the past couple episodes is trying to guess what happens next episode. I mean, I don't even think we should do that anymore because, fuck, man, I have no clue what's going to happen next week. I mean, at this point, I'm thinking Room 104 shit. Like, it's going to be I was going to say a musical, but I guess that's how the second episode opened. So, I mean, what the next episode is going to be, a 50s comedy? I have no idea. I don't know.
Well, I think you're 2 out of 3 in regards to prophetic dreams, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's the other thing. We didn't get a prophetic dream this week.
Yeah, you're 2 out of 3. Damon is 3 for 3 on his carnal ending.
Bang.
So there's that. I got a big.
He was waiting for one of us to say that.
Yeah. No. We just had to get it out the way.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
I have a big fat ass goose egg on all of my shit.
it may come to pass later in the episode. This should go in every direction.
Before we get into any kind of predictions, let's just impactful moments. Like, just tell me something that hits you in the gut.
Elevator decapitation.
Yep. We're gonna leave the big spoiler alone. So
yeah,
the big spoiler we got to leave alone. And to be clear, just so that we're no, I can't even be clear. Just we think we know what we're talking about.
Yep, we're gonna leave that part alone.
All right.
Okay, so the decapitation for you.
Yep.
Tell them, what was it for you?
Oh, it's the Emmett Till moment. It's the meanness of it. There was like that's how you can tell you're dealing with real evil. And this nigga says, like, hey, am I gonna enjoy my trip? And all they say is like,
no,
you're not gonna enjoy this. Like, no warning, no, like, there even felt like, and none of this is all just the feeling I'm getting off of the vibe, but there's a feeling of like sneering in that moment. Like, you have no idea what's in store for you. Like, that moment was so fucked up.
Yes. Because once you put those things together and recognize that this is what that is, it is chilling.
It to your bones. To your bones.
Chilling. You know, Emmett Till is one of the biggest moments and turning points for Black people in this country. You know, his mother decided to have an open casket so the world could see what they did to him. And to see that same outfit on that handsome young man, it is just, ugh.
On a young man who's handsome and carefree and a little bit mischievous and seems like a nice kid and all the things by definition think of as Emmett Till.
No, we were told that's what he was.
Right. It was hurtful. And you know, I gotta say, I do not think that it was coincidental that we see that moment. And then at the end of the episode, we have our Karen moment with Queen Victoria. Like, this was not, oof.
All of that was really, really telling. I think the Emmett Till thing was probably the biggest for me, because what this show manages to do is give you the horror story very, very well. But then every time out, you just get a moment of Black history.
Well, that's the realness.
Yeah, like, it's even just so important.
Even though what the horror story is based around, a doctor doing disgusting
eugenics
on Black folks. That's a real thing that happened.
A lot. Multiple times for Black
folks. Real thing that happened.
Tuskegee.
Yeah.
You know, there are just many, many instances where white doctors operated and tortured black people and studied our physiology, our physicality, all of it. So, oh, excuse me, must be the wine. I haven't had any wine.
it must be the wine. Did you say that when your pinky was up drinking it?
You know I did. You know I did. But, you know, there's something about all of this, right? It's just very, very harsh.
It's very harsh. It's very harsh. That line that Victoria hits him with at the end, where she's like,
"You can't just go around killing people."
it was so cold. It was so cold.
Because that shit was so real. Like, meanwhile, she's opening up the blinds. Like, exactly. Dude, I'm not afraid of you. I never have to be afraid of you. You have to be afraid of me on so many levels.
Well, and then the crazy thing is, like, she hipped him to the point where, like, I already activated Daddy's invulnerability spell. Like, you literally can't hurt me.
There's nothing you can do to me.
Oh, I mean, but we're looking at this on some physical shit, but then there's the lens of social power and political power, and it's like, there's nothing you can do to me.
Yes.
Like, you can't even risk. If you think about that scene where she's opening the blinds, where he's holding a weapon on a white woman, people even seeing that would cause the end of his life.
It would be enough to get him killed.
And that is the power she's wielding over him. It's witchcraft in lieu of white privilege. Like, the power here is white privilege.
Wonder Twins activate white privilege.
Yeah, no, it's chilling, because it's that moment that Atticus' father is having. Is like, what am I supposed to tell these people? That on top of everything else, white people got magic on their side? Right. Like, it's this idea that, like, fuck, what do you want me to tell people? You want me to, like, just break their whole world apart? Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Got all the money. They got the laws. They got the government. Oh, by the way,
they also got magic, too.
Like, there's a hopelessness there, you know?
Yes. The power dynamic is so very strong.
It's so great.
Like you said, Montrose, is Montrose, isn't it? He's sitting at the table, and there is a literal moment of just pure exasperation of, like, what the fuck do you mean? These white folks got... He says, he's very... very particular with his words. They have magic too.
Exactly. It's the two.
It's like, they have everything else already. The fuck do you mean they also have, they need magic too? You already got everything. Like, wait a minute, dog. You got two draw two skips, a whole bunch of other shit, and you got draw fours too?
Right.
What you mean? You don't need no more draw fours, right? And that's what magic is. That's what all this is. Right. So, yeah. So that shit was very, very, very dope. I love that moment.
Yeah, it was. This show was just masterful. It really is. Like, it's very, very, very good.
Before we get out of here, Journey Smollett was acting her ass off this week.
Oh, dude, I can't remember a time when she wasn't.
Yeah, hold on. And her sister, who I think is actually British Nigerian.
That's so good.
I want to get her name right.
She was in an episode of Black Mirror as well.
Yes, she was. Yeah. She is very
good. What episode?
Wunmi Masoko.
I think she's the, isn't she the proctor when the guy's doing that video game sample? Yeah. I think that's her.
Yeah. Her name is Wunmi Masoko. Masuko.
She is outstanding. I'm
every time she's singing. Every time she
her voice was awesome.
Yep.
Loved it.
As is Journey. Like, they're all they some singing folks. Like,
Nigerian born British actress, and she is dope. And, you know, their chemistry is great. There looks to be years of pain and mistrust.
Yes.
And
yes, there's some real shit going on between them. Like, they're your point to their chemistry is well put. Like, there's otherworldly chemistry between the two of them, and it's not just like, you know, charisma or attraction, which you often see with like mixed sex pairings. Like, there's like some real like anguish. Yep. You know, like this is their chemistry is just really good. I'm super impressed.
Yep, just dope. So another 10 out of 10 this past episode. And yeah, man, anything else y'all been watching before we get out of here?
So I have slowly rewatched, and I think I've mentioned very bits and pieces to you guys. I've just had it on the background while I'm kind of like listening to music, I guess, since I've been working from home, Game of Thrones. It's just been running and running. Season 8 does play better when binged. That's not to say it's good. I'm not saying it's good, but it does play better. Yeah.
I mean,
it plays better when you binge it. It again, I'm not saying that it's a good season. It's not, but
I can see that. I can see that.
It does play. It just feels more natural that way. And my brother-in-law had caught up really late with Game of Thrones, so he watched everything binged for the first time. So he just ran it through. So when everybody was complaining about season 8, his comment was, I didn't think it was that bad. And I'm like, oh man, you know, we had years of disappointment built up for that. Right. And then, binging it through, it just plays a little better. So that was nice. Again, I mean, that moves it from like maybe an F or a D to a D or a C. You know what I mean? I mean, it's still not a great season at all, but it does play better. So,
I don't think I ever gave it an F. I think I had it at a solid.
It was like a D, dude.
Yeah, I was gonna say C, but that's just I don't know, nostalgia and hindsight.
Yeah, I get it, but I mean, like, I might say it's a C minus now. It does play better. It's just like it went from like almost failing to okay, yeah. I mean, I guess that's if that's how they're gonna end it, okay.
Yeah, there's. Man, we don't need to beat that dead horse, but there's...
No. I've been running through that and even episodes Erica would come in, my wife would come in and watch some with me, and even when season 8, because that's the only season we had not rewatched, so we watched some episodes, and I can enjoy this more that I know what's happening and I already know where they're going, and I'm watching it having just saw, you know, we just saw season 7, we just saw season 6, because right. you're just running right through. It's just straight through. So,
and you're not upset about it.
Well, that's the other thing. Correct. And you're not upset about it. So, and then, you know, the thing that I've been meaning to watch that I haven't, and, you know, tying back to the beginning of the episode, I got Black Panther pulled out. I own the Blu-ray. Me too. So I got it pulled out. I just need to watch it. So yeah, I think mine's actually 4K Blu-ray combo. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just meaning to rewatch that. And I told Damon before, one of the movies I have not watched, unfortunately, I have not seen 42. So that's at the top of my list. That'll be the next movie that I put on that I can actually sit down and watch.
The one I haven't seen is Get On Up, which I'm a huge James Brown fan. So I definitely want to watch that one.
You should see that. And pay close attention to the way he says Mr. Bird. That shit is incredible. Incredible. So yeah.
All right. So like, let's just try. I know this is an impossible task, but let's just try. Let's just briefly. What's happening next week? What do we think?
No, I'm not doing that.
Come on. Nope. You nope. Of all the people, you not the person to complain.
That is absolutely true. But I am gonna leave Lovecraft alone. I'm gonna enjoy the ride. I'm gonna take my wins and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it really is about.
Yep, you're right. I've been working my way.
I think they're gonna play more into the ending with Atticus and Karen. I mean, I think that's gonna play. I think it's gonna be more like episode 2 as opposed to episodes 1 and 3.
Well, I think we're about to get a buddy cop routine, some Scooby Gang shit.
Do we know how many episodes are in the season yet?
We don't.
I think, you know, I was looking at that the other day. I want to say. I thought there were 10. I think there might be 10.
Okay. Okay.
So we got. Six.
Let me see. This one. Yeah, there's 10.
So 7 more.
October 18th is the finale.
Yeesh.
Oh, God, that's a terrible time to end this. I feel like a Halloween episode of Lovecraft is like, fuck.
I'm just glad to get that Halloween binging on.
Yeah. I have no idea what the fuck is going on. None whatsoever. But I'm going to throw it out there. I mean, obviously, they're driving a wedge between Letty and her sister. And to Ryan's point, there is a connection there of some sort. I think we're going to see some recruitment going on. I think they're going to try to pull Letty's sister to the dark side and play her against the rest of the folks. That's my thought.
We's gonna see. We's gonna see. All right. Yeah. So, Toe, what else have you been watching?
Blackish, which is deliciously ignorant. I just watched Andre fall into the sunken place at the announcement that his daughter, who is actually grown and out of the house, is having sex. And it was the funniest thing I've seen in years. I giggled like a child on my floor and rolled around. I really did. I have not laughed that hard in a very, very, very long time. So
I would have paid good money to see that.
Oh, thank you, Kenya Barris. It was great. I appreciate it. More of that, please, sir.
Yep. Shit's still good. Let's see. Well, I've been working through Room 104.
I've been working through
Doom Patrol.
Oh yeah.
What are your thoughts?
We're gonna have to, once you're caught up though, we'll have to do a Doom Patrol wrap up episode.
We'll do a full wrap up. I'm pretty far away from that.
Okay.
What are your
initial thoughts? Isn't it fucking weird?
It's super weird. So weird. You know, and not always weird in a this is cool. Weird, sometimes weird in a this is weird. For the sake of being weird.
You're not wrong.
But it's okay. No, it's cool.
It's uncomfortable often.
But yeah, but I deal with it. You know, it's cool. I'll take it. I'll fuck with it. Yeah. Outside of that, you know, there isn't too much I've really been watching. My wife and I, we hadn't even watched much. Like, you know, we'll sit down and watch an episode of Stand Up or something like that. I think we started Nora from Queens. Like they just.
Oh, is that good? It makes me cringe just thinking about it.
I know people don't really fuck with Awkwafina because the way she kind of used black scent to gain celebrity and then kind of just dished all that shit. So I know people don't always fuck with her off that, but I find her pretty fun.
Wait, you were saying, I just missed that you were watching her show that's on HBO Max?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, Eric has been watching. She really likes it.
Yep. But then I also watched Underwater with Kristen Stewart.
I'm all for Kristen Stewart.
It's a horror flick. You know, imagine 6 miles down and some shit is trying to kill you.
Like, oh, wait a minute. I'm totally wrong. I'm not for Kristen Stewart. I was really thinking about Kristen.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was quiet. I was quiet. And I wasn't
No. I was thinking about her from, what is it, on Being a God in Central Florida. I'm not for Kristen Stewart. No.
Oh,
I
see that. Kirsten Dunst.
Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm not about that Kristen Stewart life. So,
so this cast is actually pretty cool. Because as Kristen Stewart, T.J. Miller, Vincent Castle, quite good in this. Jessica Henwick, you know, I think everybody knows Jessica Henwick.
Yeah.
From Iron Fist, the best part of Iron Fist. So I don't think
that's... She was in Game of Thrones.
She was. She was.
Yeah. She's one of the Sand. And she was in Star Wars too. She's been all, but she's been in all the big shit.
Yeah, she's one of the Sand Vipers. So
yeah.
She's awesome. But she's in this, and she is... They're underwater. There's a lot of shit that happens. You know, think of monster movie underwater, and that's what this is. Kind of paint by numbers, underwater monster movie. But it's cool.
What is Kristen Stewart doing in this shit? Like, I don't feel like she needs the money. Like,
I think it's an interesting thing to do, but I imagine the shoot of this had to have been brutal.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, brutal. Like, there's no way as an actor you would enjoy this, because you're either wet and cold for 12 hours a day,
right,
in a suit where you are, if you're claustrophobic even in the least, this shit is just like, this shit is tough just looking at it.
Her co-star in the movies is Batman. Is she playing an underwater B movies to sound like that seems wrong.
Hey, yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
So. Oh, by the way, so Batman got that Rona.
Yep.
Oh, y'all see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yep.
Shut down all the, shut everything down for a couple weeks.
Man, if this is, if that is not the story of 2020, where even the Batman gets the Rona, man, well,
you already said he ain't no Batman. You already said he ain't no Bruce Wayne.
I mean, yo, Bruce Wayne wouldn't have got that shit. That's all I'm saying.
He'd have had a vaccine already.
It, for real.
They did announce a premiere date for Mandalorian too.
They did. Is it October
20th.
I still have not finished that.
You should.
No, I'm sorry, October 30th.
Excuse me. That's what I thought. Okay, I thought it was later. That's cool.
Yeah, I'll finish it by then.
You should definitely finish it.
You gotta finish this. Dude. Oh, come on, man. Yeah. It's
just a little slow, but I love it. Nah, every bro. Time I watch it and sit Trust down me. And watch it, I
by
love
the time,
it.
By the time you get to that end, completely worth it.
All right. I'm gonna sit down. I'm gonna get that done.
Yep. So that's that. Yeah. That's about it. The Boys is coming out this week.
First three episodes are on right now.
They're up
on Amazon. Yeah.
I'll be watching that tomorrow.
Go check that out.
That's what I'm gonna be doing tomorrow. This weekend.
I will be watching that tomorrow. I cannot wait. I really wanna see how they play the situation with the butcher and his wife. I want to see where they take it.
Yeah, I
that's going to tell me everything I need to know.
Yeah, I don't think this shit going to play out well. So,
it's definitely going to play out bad either way they do it. But there's no coming back from that, bro. Sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a time out here and shout out Natalie Portman for making sure she got some of this Marvel money. And Endgame, after she kind of disavowed herself of everything, Thor. Shout out to you, Nevin.
Oh yeah, she played that.
Well, game. Yeah, and she walked herself into a role in the next movie.
Yes, she did.
A major role.
Yep.
Look, I'm not mad at her. I'm not mad at her.
I'm just saying. Get checks.
You know, girl, get that money. And I don't even really see her acting that much anymore. So she just might be like, yo, I need some money for my retirement fund.
But didn't she like recently have a baby? Awesome. Does that make that up?
I
don't really be following her, and then nobody else does either. So I'm just proud of her. Like, live your fucking private ass life, bro.
Yeah, like that's an amazing thing to be able to have a level of anonymity.
Are you kidding?
You know, the fact that like you were an A-list actor and we don't know if you had a kid, that's pretty important.
That's you can't get no better than that. Girl, cash your big checks, live your life.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm all for it.
So, I agree. I didn't mean to stop y'all, but yeah. outside of that, you know, what's left? Nothing? We good? We gonna get up out of here?
Not a damn thing. We good.
All right. Well, then, yeah. Anything else y'all want to say before we get out of here?
Don't think so.
Okay, Black Lives Matter. So, Tony, anything you want to say?
All I got. Vote, motherfuckers, please vote by mail, by carrier pigeon, by your black ass into a station. suit, whatever the fuck you got.
Get a hazmat suit. Go vote.
Go fucking vote.
Yep.
And if you live in North Carolina, apparently you can vote twice.
Oh, my God.
President Cheeto strikes again. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Biden had said that, the Republicans would have chewed his head off and spit it back at him?
Yeah, no, they should.
There are no standards.
It's all gone. Shit's dumb. But it don't matter. Vote, motherfuckers. Just vote.
I mean, yeah, we're only in a depression. But yeah.
Only in a depression.
Worldwide.
And a pandemic. And
yeah, you know.
Black Panther died.
Black Panther dead. Like, I mean, you know. Just another fucking day. Jesus Christ, man.
Right. This is the first time, dude, if I got
something else to say, like, man, can we just stop killing white folks for a little bit? Give me a week. I got a lot on my plate right now. I'm not feeling super great. Just give me a week, please. Just don't kill no black folks for the rest of the week. Can we do that, America? Please.
It is Labor Day, so they're going to kill one.
I'm saying give us.
Oh, man.
All I'm asking.
Yeah, good luck, bro.
Yeah,
good luck. Yeah, so get out the room. Horror, pop culture, anything popping. Find us on Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, iTunes, anywhere good podcasts are found. We appreciate y'all. And Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever.
Yep. Peace.